Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Bloodlines here at Eurofolk Radio. Today is June 9, 2019, and wow, man, I can't stand it anymore, Pastor Steve. The deep state, otherwise known as the World Kosher Mafia, has bumped off two more state representatives. First, I'm going to read. And
where did it happen?
Well, in their homes, you know.
No. What state did it happen?
Well, one in Arkansas and one in Oklahoma, but the one
Arkansas.
There you go, Arkansas. So we will do Josephus today. We'll continue the story of the Herodians, but we have a couple of features, and this is a big story. I want to read to you how the mainstream press is not really reporting on it. This is from att.net, which is, you know, basically a big corporation, corporate news, a corporate internet provider. And here's what they have to say.
I first heard this story on that guy's web blog thing, the Judeo-Talmudist, out of Alaska.
Yeah.
He has some interesting stuff, and I listened to him, but his viewpoint is totally wrong.
Yeah, it's Jewish.
He's trying to be a Jew, and
right.
He's not.
But he reports. He reports really good news. You know,
he reports stuff, and I get a lot of stuff off there. But his
He thinks the Jews
theology is a little.
Yeah, his theology's off. Yeah. All right. So, two former state senators found dead in Arkansas and Oklahoma within days. That should be ringing bells, folks. That should be sounding just like those doctors who were trying to overcome autism. You know, we had a slew. Yeah, bell ringer. All right. Yeah, definitely. That should send alarms, folks. Within days, and what a coincidence, right? Right. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, it's just a coincidence. It's
just a coincidence.
And it's only a coincidence that they were trying to expose a child trafficking ring working from within the Arkansas state government. They were both working on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Boy, that's a coincidence.
That's a coincidence. Well, here's how AT&T handles the story. Lawmakers in Arkansas and Oklahoma are mourning the loss of two former state senators who were found dead in their homes within a span of 2 days. In Arkansas, this week's fatal shooting of former Republican State Senator Linda Collins Smith is being investigated as a homicide. In Oklahoma, former State Senator Jonathan Nichols was found dead from a gunshot in his home in Norman, about 20 miles from Oklahoma City, according to police. Authorities have not provided additional details on apparently unrelated deaths. Really? No details? Pastor Steve, why don't you give us the scoop?
All right, this is from CD Media. Breaking news. Well, it's not breaking. It's been done by the guy in Alaska. I first heard about it, and then we decided to do it here. Murdered Arkansas former GOP state senator believed she was closing in on child trafficking ring in Arkansas state government. And this is a beautiful blonde-haired lady with blue eyes, just a beaming smile.
Right.
Just
Israelite.
Yes, absolutely. Well, they kill us all day long. Former Republican Arkansas State Senator Linda Collins Smith, who was found murdered in her home this week in Pocahontas, Arkansas.
Oh, my goodness. Is that where Elizabeth Warren lives?
Man. Running bear, love little white dove. Believed she was closing in on a child trafficking ring working from within.
Okay.
The Arkansas state government.
Now, why couldn't ATT report that? I mean, it's not hard to find this information. But they're protecting the child traffickers. That's why, folks. They're going to bury this story. This is the level of mainstream media today. They say nothing.
Cover up. Exactly. What they're accusing Trump of, they're doing.
That's right. That's right. It's all kike publishing companies who will refuse to report on any stories of their criminal activities.
Right.
Yeah. So we'll do more with this. Go ahead.
You want me to read on?
Yeah, just read a couple more, you know, because I want to get.
Okay. A verified source close to Colin Smith told CD Media that she was about to go public with incriminating information on sitting judges in Arkansas who were involved in taking children from poor women via the Department of Human Services, Child Protective Services, in Arkansas, and selling them to wealthy individuals.
No wonder she was Arkansas.
Such a deal we got by you. We got this little goy boy.
Yeah.
Just your style there, Mr. Faggot.
Cheap. Selling them cheap, right? Now, this is what's going on. This is what's going on, folks. Mainstream media refuses to report on child trafficking.
All right. The source also disclosed that Colin Smith believed the perpetrators were using illegal aliens to facilitate the crimes, which included murdering the mothers of the stolen children. Now, this goes on. We're going to hit this on fake news
now.
We just wanted to, we don't want to do the whole thing. We want a little teaser.
Right.
And
if this isn't a teaser,
I don't know what is.
Man.
So,
several years ago, I reported on a similar situation in Georgia. A white Georgia senator or congresswoman, I forget which, was also murdered for the same reason. She was investigating shady activities in the Georgia Department of Family Services. Right?
Well, this is one giant pedophile ring.
Mm-hmm.
And they're vicious.
Yes, they are.
Vicious. They'll snuff the children too if they get too close.
And the mass media is part of the action. That's why you never hear anything about it. Okay. All right. So, more forthcoming on Tuesday's Fake News Now. But let's get into today's show. We're going to do a feature quickly, not serious in detail, about Philo of Alexandria, because I have been asked by many people whether Philo was a Jew or a Judahite. You know, was he an Edomite Pharisee or was he a Judahite living in Alexandria, Egypt? So we have to understand that the Judahite community in Alexandria actually goes way, way back. It even goes back to the days of Solomon. You know, when the kingdom was split up into the house of Israel and house of Judah, Jeroboam, who eventually took charge of the house of Israel, the 10 northern tribes, went to Egypt for, sanctuary. Okay? And even before then, in the days of Zedekiah, Zedekiah's two daughters, Skada and Tiatefi, fled to Egypt and lived there for quite a while, and a lot of Judahites went with them, okay? Many of them staying.
They're using the term Jew here when it should be Judean.
Right, exactly, right. Yeah, well, the mainstream theology doesn't make any distinction between Jews and Judahites. Between Judeans and Judahites. They're clueless about that. So this is where people get the idea, that first of all, that Josephus was a Jew. He was not. He was a Judahite. He was
a Roman soldier.
Right.
Roman citizen. And mm-hmm. Jews couldn't be citizens of Rome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Israelites could.
Right. And likewise with Rome, we had a Judahite community in Rome going back many centuries before Christ. And they were Torah practicing Judahites. They had the Torah and practiced it. And the same was going on in Alexandria, Egypt. Many of the Judahites that had left in the days of Zedekiah stayed there, and they had their segregated Judahite community.
Rome was built by the Zerah branch of Yehuda.
That is correct.
They were Zerah Yehudim,
mm-hmm.
Jews.
But they were not Torah-keeping.
Yeah, they were of the tribe of Zerah, who had paganized over the years, like so many of our people have, even today. We got all these Israelites out here that are doing paganism and blah, 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 blah. And same deal. You know, they were influenced by the local customs.
Right, right. So, leaving the question open whether he was a pure-blooded Judahite, which I believe he was, versus a Hellenizer, which he also was. Okay.
Hellenistic, period. Yeah. In other words, he adopted a lot of the Hellenistic or Greek philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And it says he was one of the most important Jewish philosophers.
Judean is more accurate.
Judean philosophers.
Right. Yeah, okay. And I believe he was actually a pure-blooded Judahite because he was one of the leaders of the synagogue community there. All right, so and here's where the confusion arises: the Judahites in Rome and in Alexandria and in the Roman sphere and Greek sphere of influence were Torah practicing Judahites, and they had synagogues. Okay,
right.
This is well before any Pharisee began to impersonate a Judahite priest, okay? So, so these were pure Judahite communities. We only can speculate as to how pure they were, okay? But they weren't intermarrying with Negroes, right? If they intermarried with Greeks in Alexandria, that still is acceptable in Yahweh's eyes because we can marry among ourselves. The Aryans can marry among ourselves.
The Hellenes or the Greek
mm-hmm.
people of Israel, the Greek Israelites, were acceptable for intermarriage.
That's right. But they were, for the most part, pagans, right? So there's very little likelihood.
They had paganized, but there are certain elements there that were not pagan.
Right. Yeah. And so wherever the Judahite synagogues emerged, there was tension between the Torah-keeping Judahites and the surrounding community, which was often pagan. All right. So there is very much bad blood between, even though they're of the same race, these Hellenized pagans looked down upon the Torah-keeping Judahites. Okay.
Well, so that's why it says in the Bible there is no distinction between the Judahite or the Yehudim.
Right. Good catch.
The Judeans mm-hmm. of Israelite descent.
Right.
And they say the Greeks or the Hellenes, as it actually says in Scripture, mm-hmm. which were the Israelites living in Greece.
The Greco-Roman world. Exactly.
Right.
Right, right. Okay. Now, it says here, he tried to fuse and harmonize ancient Greek philosophy and Judaism, actually Torah, using a composite of Judahite exegesis. They use the word Jewish, but we know it's Judahite.
Right.
Judaism is not the religion of Moses. It's the Talmud.
No.
That's Judaism. And they were not teaching Talmud. Or interpretation of authoritative texts and the art of allegory he had learned from Stoic philosophy. So here's my take on it, Steve. Philo was trying to smooth things over between the pure-blooded Judahite synagogue community and the Hellenistic Greek pagans. Okay, there was no reason. Yeah, they looked down on the synagogue believers, the Torah believers, because they were segregated, and they did not associate with pagans. All right, that's the way we're supposed to be. Well, right? This has nothing to do with the Jewish moneylenders who took over Palestine, starting with King John Hyrcanus in 121 BC. All right, those are Edomites. But it was those Edomites who went to Rome, went to Alexandria, went all over the Greco-Roman world and became moneylenders and gave Judea a bad name. Okay? Yeah. Those are two completely different subjects, right? Two completely separate.
And then they invented this word Jew.
Right.
Which is a modern word. It was never in Scripture back in those days.
No,
it has been inserted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a complete, there are two completely different groups of people confused by everybody to be the same people. All right? So
well, that's not accidental.
No.
That's intentional.
Right, okay. So I'm just going to quote from this other website. I'll put this in. This is my from earlyjewishwritings.com. Philo was not a Jew. He was a Judahite. And, of course, they continue to conflate Judahite with Talmudic Edomites. And we in identity know the difference. Okay. F.H. Colson writes about Philo. I guess he translated Philo, volume 8, pages 158 to 161 on the subject. Well, here, courage in peacetime, courage or manliness. Courage in peacetime is inculcated everywhere in the law, but we must see what it says about courage in war. Observe that the cowardly are not to be enrolled in the army. He's quoting Torah. Nor yet those who would naturally be just entering on some new undertaking which would distract their interest. The warriors that Moses looks for are men of sound and active body and having the gallantry which prefers a glorious death to a life of dishonor. Does that sound like an Edomite Jew to you, Pastor Steve?
No. They'll save their own skin regardless of who they have to throw under the bus.
Yeah, and all of the Jewish warriors of America that fought in Vietnam, all two of them, were
in the rear with the gear. Yeah,
right, brother. The sergeant, right, in the rear with the gear. Sergeants who dispensed the I'm trying to think.
The supply sergeant.
The supply sergeant. Thank you.
Yeah.
I've been so far removed, I couldn't think of supply sergeant. That's what they were. They were skimming the supplies and selling them on the black market, right?
And shipped a fortune home.
Right. Exactly. All right. So such must have been the 12,000 selected for the war with Midian. And Philo now tells the story of that war from its beginning. The seduction of many Israelites by means of the Midianite women. Okay, so Philo was very familiar with the Bible, with the Old Testament, and the punishment which deterred the rest from following their example, and how the small army enlisted by Moses to avenge the sin of the seducers won a complete victory over vastly greater numbers without losing a man. This victory, due to the support of God, agrees with the promise given in Deuteronomy that the obedience to the law will secure success in war. Now, would a Jew teach this?
No.
No. Okay. Because that whole story, which involved the javelin being thrust through the Israelite man and the Midianite woman, is a lesson against race
mixing. Well, the Midianite woman was Adamic.
Yeah.
But was an idol worshiper, right. And they were perverting the minds of the men through their women.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a message that you don't teach this idol worship and this paganism to our people.
Right. And you don't marry such women.
That's right.
Okay. So this is how exclusive the Judahites were. I mean, this is ultra exclusive. All right. So, but the Jews teach race mixing in all its various forms. And
They promote that because they are not a pure people. They are a race mixed people because their bloodline requires fresh blood all the time. They can't, their spirit can't abide in their normal bodies because they are so weakened and they are so rife with disease, mental, physical. So they have to mix in order to refresh their bloodline and to also hide within the indigenous people of various lands.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay. Under humanity, Mr. Colson states, Philo now proceeds to show how Moses, knowing his end was near, would not bequeath the succession to his family or even to his friend and lieutenant Joshua without consulting God, and how when the choice of Joshua had been divinely approved, he charged him before the congregation, thereby showing how every ruler should train and encourage his successor, and then broke into a great song, followed by the blessing of the tribes. He now passes on to give some examples of the humanity of the Mosaic Law. All right, loans are to be made to Israelites without exacting interest, and you just did a wake-up call on that subject.
I sure did.
Okay.
Sure did. It's all right. Backed up all through history. All right. We're not to do interest to our brethren.
Right.
Now, interest to aliens, that's different.
Right, right.
What are you reading from, by the way?
Oh, this is I sent you the link. It's earlyjewishwritings.com, Philo. All right, and I'll put this in the chat room momentarily. It's very important because I've been asked many times, was Philo an Edomite or a Judahite? And given these quotations from Philo's discourses, and there's a lot of his writings that have survived, he's a Torah practicing Judahite who was the head of a synagogue congregation in Alexandria. I think that's the most accurate description of Philo. He was not an Edomite, okay? And let's see. Sorry.
That's the wrong link, Eli.
Yeah.
Nibble.
Man, they're quick.
Yeah, there you go.
Let me see if I can find the correct one.
Send it to me on Skype because I've got the Skype thing open. I have a couple of things on my. Yeah. I got a really big screen, folks.
Uh-huh.
Huge.
Yeah.
And I got all kinds of different stuff on it.
Yeah. For some reason, my Internet Explorer has this glitch, which does not copy. I think I'm copying a current item on the screen. But when I try to paste it, it pastes the previous one, which is really frustrating. But here it is. This is the correct one. Early, quote-unquote, Jewish writings. Philo was not an Edomite Jew, okay? He was.
Okay, send that to me here also.
Right. Okay, exactly. So this is my take on it. And he wouldn't be teaching the laws of Moses and the exclusivity of the Israelites if he were an Edomite Jew.
Because okay, got it.
Yeah, the Pharisees did not give a damn about that. They would convert anybody for money. All right? And they had already started practicing baptism for money. The Pharisees did. All right?
Oh, yeah. And anyway, make a buck, man.
Right, exactly. So, but John the Baptist was doing it for free.
You don't give us enough money. We hold you under the water for a long time.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So the reason why we ventured into this sidelight here is because Flaccus and Barbara and I were talking about the Poles and the Jews, the thousand years of enslavement.
Oh, I loved that.
Yeah.
Show.
Yeah,
that was wonderful. That was hot.
And she's going to include Flaccus, the story of Flaccus, in her book. But Flaccus ran afoul of the community headed by Philo in Alexandria because of the two reasons. Number one, the Romans hated the Judahites because of their segregated lifestyle. They didn't blend in with either the Romans or the Greeks. okay?
Mm-hmm. Because of the paganism angle.
Because of the paganism, right. And then, but he conflates those Torah-practicing Judahites with the moneylender Judean Edomites, okay? They were the real source of all the trouble for Rome, okay?
Sure.
Yeah, the Judahites were an annoyance because they refused to integrate. But the Judean moneylenders were a completely different animal, and everybody conflates those two different groups of people, and you have to, you know, you have to separate the two. It was the
fake
evil,
Jews, yeah, fake yeah, Jews. Right. Everybody hates you.
Right. Okay. So you have to always keep these two populations distinct. The Romans and the Greeks had their different reasons for disliking each group, right? But the Judahites were never moneylenders, absolutely never. Nope. The moneylenders in the New Testament were the Babylonian Edomite Jews. That's who
they were.
Correct. Okay.
That's correct. Not the Greeks didn't like them. They didn't like the real Judeans.
Right.
Because they would not assimilate into their Greek gods.
Exactly.
And the Romans didn't like them for the same reason. They wouldn't assimilate, and they would not worship the pantheons of these little g gods, these statues.
Yeah.
They wouldn't participate in that.
Right, and the Romans were especially, the common people, the patricians, the Roman patricians, were annoyed with the Judahite community because they were given status by the emperors under Julius and Claudius of being allowed to practice our religion on our terms. But they paid taxes just like the other
citizens. Yeah, they rendered unto Caesar that
right?
which was Caesar's. It had Caesar's image on the coin.
Yeah,
so here's your tax. No problem.
And Josephus records the fact, right, that
the
emperors gave that status. They were allowed to practice their religion, our religion, as unmolested, and any Roman citizen who would want to molest the segregated Judahite community was punished by law, okay?
Well, they didn't want to have us messed with because we were faithful taxpayers. We rendered unto Caesar that which was Caesar's.
Right.
We didn't cause a problem. It was the Edomites that were causing the problem.
Yeah.
The Herod crowd, which we're going to get into later, was always trying to suck up
and
gain power,
right? And even money.
even to opposing the emperor.
That's right. And this was the real problem that these Roman writers, such as Flaccus and many others, had with the so-called Jews. They're talking about the Judean Edomite moneylenders. Those were the people causing the trouble, not the Judahite
Judean
synagogues.
Judean is a regional or national term. They're living in the land that belonged to the tribe of Judah.
Right.
You are a Judean. Now, your racial nationality is an entirely
different thing.
Different factor.
Right.
There were Israelites, and there were Edomites, and there were Arabs, and some of these others, the Hellenes, all these different, and the Romans, they had all different kind of people. And some were Israelites. Some were not. Some were of mixed blood and were excluded.
Mm-hmm.
And the Israelites wouldn't mess with the mixed blood. We should be doing that today, but how many of us actually do it?
Right. So by all accounts, and the reason why we did this segue to Philo is because he is a contemporary of Herod. Okay, and the Herodians, all right? So, and then the Romans, they were conflating the two communities together, and most outside historians did the same. They didn't care about the religious and ethnic disputes going on in Judea. They just lumped both groups into one terminology, namely Judean. Okay.
And there is a wide, wide gulf between the groups.
That's right.
They should not be lumped together.
Exactly.
They were at absolute odds with one another.
Enemies. Total enemies.
Oh, yeah.
Edomites versus Judahites. Right. Okay. All right. So that brings us up to date on the situation in Alexandria, Egypt during the days of the Herodians. So let's go back to Josephus. And where were we? Where do we leave off, Pastor Steve?
Chapter 2, section 5.
Book 17?
Book 17. Okay. That's right. Okay. Book 18. Pardon me. Book 18, chapter 2. Okay. Section 5. This time died Antiochus, the king of Comma. Let me change my glasses. I have a longer set of glasses on. Okay. I need my magnifiers for this little print. These are marvelous books, but boy, is the print small. Mm-hmm. At this time died Antiochus, the king of Commagene, whereupon the multitude contended with the nobility and both sent ambassadors to Rome. For the men of power were desirous that their form of government might be changed into that of a Roman province. They wanted equal status as Romans. That wasn't going to happen.
Right.
As were the multitude desirous to be under kings as their fathers had been. Okay, before Rome came in, they wanted to go back to the line of David, the Davidic line of kings.
That's correct.
Okay. So the Senate made a decree that Germanicus should be sent to settle the affairs of the East. Okay. Mm-hmm. Fortune hereby taking a proper opportunity for depriving him of his life, for when he had been in the East and settled all affairs there, his life was taken away by the poison which Piso gave him, as has been related elsewhere. There's a footnote.
Okay.
This citation is now wanting. In other words, you can't find it.
Right. Oh, okay.
Okay.
All right.
And that ends that.
Okay.
That ends that whole section. That's just very short.
Right. Okay. And that was in book 18, chapter 2?
Yeah. Now we start chapter 3.
Chapter 3, sedition of the Jews, it says here, of the Judeans is the proper term, because this was a mixture of Edomite Pharisees and the Judahites who were following them, who were being duped by them, against Pontius Pilate, concerning Christ, and what befell Paulina and the Judeans at Rome. Again, as we just explained, in Rome there were the Judahite synagogues and the Edomite Jew moneylenders, who were being conflated by Caesar at Rome as well as in Judea.
Well, yeah, it's like today we've got the Judeo-Christian churches, which are teaching Judaism, and you've got Christian identity.
Right. Yeah, they're actually practicing Judaism.
There's a lot of Israelites out there that are deceived by these false teachers,
and
we try to reach them, and we are reaching a great many.
That's why
we're so popular with them.
And so hated, so hated by Jews and Judeos alike.
So popular,
But now Pilate, and this is where Pilate is first introduced, I believe, by Josephus, the procurator of Judea. That's correct. Judea is the proper terminology. Okay. Removed the army from Caesarea to Jerusalem to take their winter quarters there in order to abolish the Mosaic laws. There weren't Jewish laws because the Jews have never practiced the Mosaic law. So he introduced Caesar's effigies, which were upon the ensigns, and brought them into the city. Now, Philo had the same problem with Flaccus in Alexandria. Flaccus started introducing statues into Alexandria, Egypt, to which the Judahite community objected. The Pharisees did not object to Herod's introduction of pagan statues. Okay?
Yeah, they weren't following the laws.
No, they weren't.
It might rock the boat, and they couldn't make that much money if the boat was being rocked.
Right.
Which was the whole idea, same as it is today.
Didn't they say we have no king but Caesar?
They admit everybody in their Judeo-Christian churches.
That's right.
Everybody's welcome, whether a sodomite or a transgender or some other kind of freak. Mm-hmm. They just let them all in. Everybody's welcome. Just bring your money.
Yes.
That's what it's all about.
Yeah, yeah. So he introduced Caesar's effigies, which were upon the ensigns. This is Pilate we're talking about. And brought them into the city. Whereas our law, not Jewish law, our law forbids us the very making of images. On which account, and this is Joseph telling us that he is a Judahite, a law-abiding Judahite. On account of the four former procurators were wont to make their entry into the city with such ensigns as had not those ornaments. Okay, well, why? Because the various Caesars up to this point in time had an agreement with the priesthood not to do so. All right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they agree, okay, you pay your tribute. You know, we collect the taxes. We'll allow you to practice your religion as you see fit. Okay, that was the agreement.
We won't bring these pagan images into your city. No problem.
But Herod was the
one. As long as you give us those shekels, we don't care.
Right. Herod was the one who broke that agreement by introducing pagan statues.
Yep. That eagle that he did, where they took it down and broke it all to pieces. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So you got to know who's Jew and who isn't. Who's Judahite? A huge difference. Pilate was the first who brought these images to Jerusalem and set them up there, which was, you know, and this was a problem for the Pharisees, too, because the Pharisees were pretending to abide by the law of Moses, you know, so their pretense had to go by the wayside when they, you know, when Christ came along, they had to choose sides, right? Rome or Christ, and you know which side they chose. Okay.
That's right.
And which was done without the knowledge of the people because it was done in the nighttime. But as soon as they knew it, they came in multitudes to Caesarea and interceded with Pilate many days that he would remove the images. Pilate was breaking the agreement between Rome and the Judahites. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when he would not grant their request because it would tend to the injury of Caesar, while yet they persevered in their requests, on the sixth day he ordered his soldiers to have their weapons privately, while he came and sat upon his judgment seat, which was so prepared in the open place of the city, that it concealed the army that lay ready to oppress them. And when the Judeans petitioned him again, he gave a signal to the soldiers to encompass them round and threatened that their punishment should be no less than immediate death unless they would leave off disturbing him and go their ways home. But they threw themselves upon the ground and laid their necks bare. No Jew would do this.
No.
A pure-blooded Judahite, yes. And laid their necks bare and said they would take their deaths very willingly rather than the wisdom of their laws should be transgressed. Upon which Pilate was deeply affected with their firm resolution to keep their laws inviolable and presently commanded the images to be carried back from Jerusalem to Caesarea. Whoa! Whoa.
All right.
Now, Herod built Caesarea with those images. All right. Which was a violation of Torah. Back to you, Pastor Steve.
Sounds like the yellow vest.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. Oh,
all
man.
Right. Good stuff. Really good stuff.
Oh, let's see. Where were we here? I'm highlighting so I don't read
section
the same
two,
thing.
Section 2, chapter 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Pilate undertook to bring a current of water to Jerusalem and did it with the sacred money. He stole money from the temple treasury,
right,
and derived the origin of the stream from the distance of 200 furlongs. That's a long distance.
Yeah.
However, the Judeans were not pleased with what had been done about this water.
I'll bet.
And many ten thousands of people got together and made a clamor against him, insisted that he should leave off that design. Some of them also used reproaches and abused the man, as crowds of such people usually do.
Right.
You swine, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, we're going to kick here, wow. So he outfitted a great number of his soldiers in the clothing of the crowd, who carried daggers under their garments, and sent them to a place where they might surround them. So he directed the Judeans himself to go away, but when they boldly cast reproaches upon him, he gave the soldier that signal which had been beforehand agreed on, who laid upon them much greater blows than Pilate had commanded them, and equally punished those that were disorderly and those that were not. They were just stabbing everybody.
For dead in Ohio. Yeah, things get out of control.
Nor did they spare them in the least. And since the people were unarmed and were caught by men prepared for that were about, there were a great number of them killed by this means, and others of them ran away wounded. And thus an end was put to this rebellion.
Pilate. Yeah.
10 soldiers and Nixon coming. We're finally on our own.
Yeah.
This is going to be a big false flag.
Yeah, and they blame, the liberals blame Nixon for that, but it was just one of the soldiers, wasn't trigger happy. He was afraid, right? And
they threw firecrackers at him, too.
Yeah.
They didn't know what it was, gunfire.
Right.
And he had live ammo. Mm-hmm. And the standing order was you don't load your weapon until you get an order to do so. He fired, and then the rest of them heard a gunshot, and they loaded their weapons, and they opened up.
Right.
But they didn't kill all that many.
Right, yeah.
They
can't blame Nixon for that. So, it was just one of those things. Whenever you have armed people, and tension in the air, stuff like this happens, right? So, in other words, he's saying...
This section 3, here's our first mention of Yeshua Messiah, right here.
All right, section 3. Now there was about this time Jesus, a wise man, if it be lawful to call him a man, for he was a doer of wonderful works. He has to be really careful not to offend the God on earth, Caesar, right? So that's why he says, if. He uses the word if.
If it be lawful to call him a man.
Yeah, right? For he was a doer of wonderful works, a teacher of such men as received the truth with pleasure. He drew over to him both many of the Judeans and many of the nations. He was Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Anointed.
Yes.
He's saying he was Messiah. All right. So all those doubters who say that Josephus did not, claim that Jesus was the Christ, here it is, right here. He did. Okay. And when Pilate, at the suggestion of the principal men among us, had condemned him to the cross, now that's not true. Pilate declared him innocent. It was the Jews who murdered Christ and condemned
him. That is correct. Mm-hmm. And not the Roman soldiers, but the temple soldiers under the command of the Pharisees.
Yeah. Now, he does say, at the suggestion of the principal men among us. Now, who were those?
Pharisees.
The Pharisees. Everybody should know that. It was not the Judahites, it was the Pharisees, and these were Edomites. under Herod. Herod had set these people up. He assassinated the Judahite Sanhedrin and replaced them with Edomites. Okay? Josephus relates this earlier. Okay? And condemned him to the cross, he says. Huh. I like this. They give A.D. 33, April 3 as the date. Very good. Very good. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So those that loved him at the first did not forsake him, for he appeared to them alive again the third day. Okay. It says here April 5th. That's not 3 days later. Whatever. Whatever the date. For he appeared to them alive again the third day, as the divine prophets had foretold these and 10,000 other wonderful things concerning him. And the tribe of Christians, so named from him, are not extinct at this day. So he refers to the Christians as a tribe.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, well, because they were Judahites and Israelites of the 10 lost tribes.
Yeah.
Essentially the same tribe. Chapter 4.
Multiple witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple witnesses.
Yeah.
He was seen by multitudes.
Right. Exactly. Of foreigners in Jerusalem as well, who confirmed the accounts in the Gospels.
Yes.
They do. Back to you.
Oh, boy. Section 4. About the same time, also another sad calamity put the Judeans into disorder, and certain shameful practices happened about the temple of Isis.
Ooh.
That was at Rome.
Right.
I will now first take notice of the wicked attempt about the temple of Isis, and will then give an account of the Judean affairs. There was at Rome a woman whose name was Paulina, one who, on account of the dignity of her ancestors and by the regular conduct of a virtuous life, had a great reputation. She was also very rich, and although she was of a beautiful countenance, and that in that flower of her age where women are the most gay, that means happy, not queer.
Right.
Yet did she lead a life of great modesty? She was married to Saturninus, one that was every way answerable to her in an excellent character.
Interesting. Okay.
Decius Mundus fell in love with this woman. He was a man very high in the equestrian order. And as she was of too great dignity to be caught by presents, in other words, he couldn't bribe her.
Right.
And had already rejected them, though they had been sent in great abundance, he was still more inflamed with love.
The more she rejects him, the more he's after her.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Peyton Place.
Oh, boy,
In so much that he promised to give her 200,000 Attic drachmas for one night's sexual intercourse.
Oh, Las Vegas.
Man.
Las Vegas in the East. Wow.
And when this would not prevail upon her, you couldn't buy her at any price.
Yeah, right.
He was not able to bear this misfortune in his amours. He thought it the best way to famish himself to death for want of food. Okay, go ahead. I don't care.
Okay.
On account of Paulina's sad refusal. And he determined with himself to die after such a manner. And he went on with this purpose accordingly. Now, Mundus had a freed woman who had been made free by his father, whose name was Ide, one skilled in all sorts of mischief. This woman was very much grieved at the young man's resolution to kill himself, for he did not conceal his intentions to destroy himself from others, and came to him and encouraged him by her discourse, and made him to hope, by some promises she gave him, that he might obtain a night's sexual intercourse with Paulina.
Wow.
And when he joyfully hearkened to her entreaty, she said she wanted no more than 50,000 drachmas for entrapping
no
the
more.
Woman. So, once she had encouraged the young man and gotten as much money as she required, she did not take the same methods as had been taken before because she perceived that the woman was by no means to be tempted by money. But as she knew that she was very much given to the worship of the goddess Isis, she was a pagan, she devised the following stratagem. She went to some of Isis's priests, and upon the strongest assurances of concealment, she persuaded them by words, but chiefly by the offer of money of 25,000 drachmas in hand, and as much more when the thing had taken effect, and told them the passion of the young man, and persuaded them to use all means possible to beguile the woman. So they were drawn in the promise to do so by that large sum of gold they were to have. Accordingly, the oldest of them went immediately to Paulina, and upon his admittance, he desired to speak with her by herself. When that was granted to him, he told her that he was sent by the god Anubis, who was fallen in love with her, and directed her to come to him.
Oh, man. Now, what a cunning scheme. So this woman was apparently of a great virtue, even though she was a pagan, but that when she was falsely convinced that an Egyptian god was wanting her to engage in
well, Isis was Egyptian too.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Upon this, she took the message very kindly and valued herself greatly upon this condescension of Anubis, and told her husband that she had a message sent her and was to dine and lie with Anubis. I'm going to go screw this god.
And what did her husband say?
Agreed.
He agreed.
Her acceptance of this offer is fully satisfied with the chastity of his wife. Okay, because it's a god, you can go cuckold me. Yeah, you can go.
Yeah.
Well,
okay.
Accordingly, she went to the temple, and after she had dined there, and it was the hour to go to sleep, the priest shut the doors of the temple. And when, in the holy part of it, the lights were also put out, then did Mundus leap out. Boing! For he was hidden therein, and did not fail to enjoy her, who was at his service all the night long, as supposing he was a god.
Amazing.
Oh, baby, I love you, Anubis.
I'm your god.
When he was gone away, which was before those priests who knew nothing of the stratagem were stirring, Paulina came early to her husband and told him how the god Anubis had appeared to her. Among her friends also, she declared how great a value she put upon this favor, who partly disbelieved the thing when they reflected on its nature and partly were amazed at it, as having no pretense for not believing it,
right,
when they consider the modesty and dignity of the person.
But gullible?
But now, on the third day after what had been done, Mundus met Paulina and says, "Nay, Paulina, you have saved me 200,000 drachmas, which sum you might have added to your own family. Yet you have not failed to be at my service in the manner I invited you. As for the reproaches you have laid upon Mundus, I value not the business of names, but I rejoice in the pleasure I reaped by what I did while I took to myself the name of Anubis." He ratted himself out and gloated Oh, man.
Can you imagine the horror that
this woman felt? Well, that's coming up right here.
Okay.
When he had said this, he went his way. But now she began to come to the sense of the grossness of what she had done and rent her garment.
Like Eve?
And told her husband of the horrid nature of this wicked contrivance.
Oh, boy.
And prayed him not to neglect to assist her in this case. So he revealed the fact to the emperor.
Oh,
whereupon Tiberius inquired into the matter thoroughly by examining the priests about it and ordered them to be crucified, as well as Ida, who was the occasion of their ruin and who had contrived the whole matter and which was so injurious to the woman. He also demolished the temple of Isis and gave order that her statue should be thrown into the river Tiber.
Wow.
While he only banished Mundus, but did no more to him, because he supposed that what crime he had committed was done out of the passion of love.
So?
And these were the circumstances which concerned the Temple of Isis. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the injuries occasioned by her priests. I now return to the relation of what happened at this time to the Judeans.
At Rome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and remember, the so-called Judeans in Rome were the synagogue-attending, Torah-abiding Judahites who did not involve themselves in the affairs of Caesar.
Okay. Yes.
Versus the Edomite Herodian Jews, who were the moneylenders to Caesar, okay? And were the ones hated by Flaccus, by all the Roman writers, okay, who were a different group of people entirely. But they didn't care. All they knew was that they were Judeans, right? So they conflated the two populations. This is interesting because I was doing research, because of our Yahweh's Covenant People shows on Friday nights. We've been discussing the origins of the various Israelite tribes and the lands they settled in Europe, okay?
Yeah, when we migrated all up into the through the Caucasus.
Yeah. So I was wondering, how to do it, because France has been in the news so much. I was wondering, was Paris named after Paris the Trojan? Or, because
I don't know.
The Trojans and the Romans were, in fact, Israelites, but they had lost their knowledge that they were Israelites.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So it turns out the
biblically educated folks.
Yeah, the Parisii, whom Paris is named after, was a Celtic tribe. And there's dispute as to whether they were Celtic, going back to 1500 BC from Zarajuda, or whether they had came over land and being of Pharaoh's Judah, okay? So there's confusion about that issue, but the tribe was known as the Parisii, okay? Well, it turns out the Isi is Isis. So chances are they were pagans, they were paganized Israelites who worshipped Isis, okay? Just as this woman here. And so this was not uncommon for our people to be paganized worshipers of Egyptian gods and goddesses. Where did they pick this up? Well, remember we just talked earlier about the Israelites that went to Alexandria, Egypt, and the bad figs of Jeremiah are the ones who picked up these pagan practices. So chances are
we had to deal with that here
at
EFR with somebody with this priestess of Isis.
Right.
Not going to have that.
Right. Exactly. All right. So we'll be doing the story of the Parisii in a future segment of YCP. It should be very interesting. Okay. Back to you, Steve.
Oh, Section 5, it's your turn.
Oh, it is? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
There was a man who was a Judean.
Okay. Right. but had been driven away from his own country by an accusation laid against him for transgressing their laws, and by the fear he was under of punishment for the same. But in all respects a wicked man, he then, living at Rome, professed to instruct men in the wisdom of the laws of Moses. We have a lot of pretenders.
Oh, yeah.
Even today, he procured also three other men entirely of the same character with himself to be his partners. I could name a bunch right now. These men persuaded Fulvia, a woman of great... You know, this reminds me of the story of Marie Antoinette and how the Jews set her up by... They did a similar thing. A Jew sent her a love letter along with a necklace. I don't know if you're familiar with this story. And what they did was they, the Duke d'Orléans, I believe it was the Duke d'Orléans, or some Roman Catholic bishop, they convinced him that Marie Antoinette wanted to have an affair with him. Okay, just like the story we just read. And this was set up by the Jews, okay? And this gave Marie Antoinette a horrible reputation among the French people, okay? And this is when she occasionally say, well, let them eat cake, you know? So she wasn't talking about all the French people. She was talking about these conspirators who had set her up, okay? So you see, this kind of thing has been happening throughout history.
And well, there's nothing new under the sun. What does the scripture say?
That's correct. That's correct. And so he procured three other men, just like himself, to be his partners. These men persuaded Fulvia, a woman of great dignity and one that had embraced the Judahite religion, to send purple and gold to the temple at Jerusalem. And when they had gotten them, they employed them for their own uses and spent the money themselves, okay? On which account it was that they at first required it of her. Whereupon Tiberius, who had been informed of the thing by Saturninus, the husband of Fulvia, who desired inquiry might be made about it, ordered that all the Judeans to be banished out of Rome. So here we see that the broad brush is being painted. So the Judahites, who were Mosaic law keepers, were also painted with the bad brush. Now, we don't know if these guys were Israelites or Edomites. The story isn't clear enough. But,
well, we've sure seen enough bad Israelites.
That's right. Okay. So three guys do something bad and the whole community suffers as a result. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is why we in Identity refuse to accept people who are immoral. All right. And as we found out from James McManus's testimony, he stated very clearly, and he was Pastor Butler's right-hand man for a long time. Pastor Butler made a big mistake when he started accepting pagan whites and white nationalists into his organization, because from that it was downhill from there. Okay, because these people have no morals, even though they're white. They have no morals. Okay, period. So, and we're not to associate with such people. They either come to us for instruction. Okay, or we preach to them, but we're not to engage with them unless they honestly and sincerely convert to Torah. All right, and if they show no signs of understanding our message and rejecting it, then so much for them. All right, call me when you're ready to talk turkey. But if you're not ready to talk turkey, I don't deal with pagans, on a personal level, okay?
Nope.
So, back, I didn't finish yet, sorry. Okay, at which time the consuls enlisted 4,000 men out of them and sent them to the island of Sardinia, but punished a greater number of them who were unwilling to become soldiers on account of keeping the laws of their forefathers. Thus were these Judeans banished out of the city by the wickedness of four men. Okay, big lesson here, huge lesson. So we suffer, and the infiltrators who come into Identity give us a bad name by teaching stuff we do not espouse, and which is opposed to Torah.
Yeah.
We've
had problems with that here.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, chapter 4.
Oh, what about you didn't finish?
I didn't?
No.
Thus were these Judeans banished out
Of the city by the wickedness of four men.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Chapter 4, this is my ball here. How the Samaritans made a disturbance and Pilate destroyed many of them. How Pilate was accused and what things were done by Vitellius relating to the Judeans and the Parthians.
Okay.
So they had trouble with the Parthians.
They were Peretz Judah.
Also Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Section 1 of chapter 4. But the nation of the Samaritans did not escape without disturbances. The man who excited them to it was one who thought lying a thing of little consequence, and who contrived everything so that the multitude might be pleased. In other words, he shined them on.
Right.
So he directed them to get together upon Mount Gerizim, which is by them looked upon as the most holy of all mountains. That's where the law was
set up by Jeroboam.
They called over to the other mountain.
Right.
And remember, they recited the law and assured them that when they were come there, he would show them those sacred vessels which were laid under that place because Moshe put them there.
Mm-hmm. Which was a lie.
Right.
Which the footnote explains.
Here's the footnote. Since Moshe never came himself beyond Jordan, nor particularly to Mount Gerizim, and since these Samaritans have a tradition among them, related here by Dr. Hudson, from Reland, who was very skillful in Judean and Samaritan learning, that in the days of Uzi or Ozis, the high priest, 1 Chronicles 6:6, the ark and other sacred vessels were, by God's command, laid up or hidden in Mount Gerizim. Hmm. It is highly probable that this was the foolish foundation the present Samaritans went upon in the rebellion here described.
So he appealed to their pride. Okay. And so guess what? Okay.
Didn't happen.
No.
So they came there armed and thought the discourse of the man probable. And as they abode at a certain village, which was called Terathaba, they got the rest together to them and desired to go up the mountain in a great multitude together. But Pilate prevented their going up by seizing the roads with a great band of horsemen and footmen who fell upon those that were gotten together in the village, and when it came to an action, some of them they killed, and others of them they put to flight, and took a great many alive, the principal of which, and also the most potent of those that fled away, Pilate ordered to be killed. Over to you.
Wow, so you can see that Pilate is developing a reputation as a hard guy to deal with, right? He didn't hesitate, although he did capitulate to the demands that the pagan idols were to be removed. But apparently on every other matter, you know, he used force to silence the crowd. Section 2.
Oh, He was nobody to mess with.
No, no. So you can see he's not a wimp, put it that way. He was a hard, battle-tested soldier, and he was given his command, and he meant to do the job, right?
Yeah.
As a soldier.
Yeah.
Right?
That's it, man.
Yeah. Okay. But when this tumult was appeased, the Samaritan Senate sent an embassy to Vitellius, a man that had been consul and who was now president of Syria, and accused Pilate of the murder of those that were killed, for that they did not go to Terathaba in order to revolt from the Romans, but to escape the violence of Pilate. I don't think that's true. The whole thing was started by who is this guy? This agitator. This guy who was pretending that Moses.
They don't give his name
yet. They don't give his name. Okay. So anyway, the man who excited them, who thought lying was a thing of little consequence, okay, must have been an Edomite, okay, but to escape the violence of Pilate. So they're making up an excuse so they can take it to the authorities. So Vitellius sent Marcellus, a friend of his, to take care of the affairs of Judea and ordered Pilate to go to Rome to answer before the emperor to the accusation of the Judeans. So Pilate, now, not really the Judeans, this is the Galileans. This whole affair was in Galilee.
Right.
So Pilate, when he had tarried 10 years in Judea, made haste to Rome, and this in obedience to the orders of Vitellius, which he durst not contradict. But before he could get to Rome, Tiberius was dead. Very interesting.
Oh, boy.
Section 3, over to you.
Okay. Let me get a little drink of coffee
here.
Yeah,
and this all reflects well on Tiberius. The indications and what I've read about Tiberius is that he was actually a very honest person, and he actually wrote against the Jewish moneylenders and blamed the Jewish moneylenders for the decline of Rome, which is a good report as far as I'm concerned. Back to you.
Well, they engineered the decline of everything.
That's right.
Section 3. But Vitellius came into Judea and went up to Jerusalem. It was at the time of that festival, which is called the Passover. Okay, Vitellius was there magnificently received and released the inhabitants of Jerusalem from all the taxes upon the fruits that were bought and sold, and gave them leave to have the care of the high priest vestments with all their ornaments, and to have them under the custody of the priests in the temple, which power they used to have formerly, although at this time they were laid up in the tower of Antonia, the citadel so called. And on the occasion following, there was one of the high priests named Hyrcanus, probably John Hyrcanus.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. See, all this accurate history,
yes,
interacts. Okay, the Apocrypha and all of that. Here's Josephus, another witness. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is documented. They've got this stuff in writing.
Yep. Okay. And it agrees. The accounts agree with one another. Which is always important. Even the Roman accounts agree with this.
That's why we're doing this. And as there were many of that name, he was the first of them. This man built a tower near the temple, and when he had so done, he generally dwelled in it and had these vestments with him, because it was lawful for him alone to put them on. And he had them there reposited when he went down into the city and took his ordinary garments.
Okay.
The same things were continued to be done by his sons and by their sons after them. But when Herod came to be king, he rebuilt this tower, which was very conveniently situated in a magnificent manner. And because he was a friend to Antoninus, he called it by the name of Antonia. Mm-hmm. And as he found these vestments lying there, he retained them in the same place, as believing that while he had them in his custody, the people would make no innovations against him. In other words, they weren't going to plot against him.
Right.
The like to what Herod did was done by his son Archelaus, who was made king after him, actually Tetrarch, after whom the Romans, when they entered on the government, took possession of these vestments of the high priest and had them reposited in a stone chamber under the seal of the priest and of the keepers of the temple, the captain of the guard lighting a lamp there every day, and 7 days before a festival, and here's a footnote, number two, The mention of the high priest's sacred garments received 7 days before the festival and purified in those days against the festival as having been polluted by being in the custody of heathens in Josephus agrees well with the traditions of the Talmudus, traditions of the elder.
Okay.
As Ruland here observes. Nor is there any question but the three feasts here mentioned were Passover, Pentecost, and Feast of Tabernacles, and the fast so called by way of distinction as Act 27, verse 9, was the great day of atonement, that is Yom Kippur, the day of the covering over. Okay. And let's see, where were we? Before the festival, they were delivered to them by the captain of the guard. When the high priest, having purified them and made use of them, laid them up again in the same chamber where they had been laid up before, and this the very next day after the feast was over. This was the practice at the three yearly festivals and on the fast day. But Vitellus put those garments into our power, and he's talking about the Israelites,
right?
As in the days of our forefathers, and ordered the captain of the guard not to trouble himself to inquire where they were laid or when they were to be used. And this he did as an act of kindness to oblige the nation to him.
Very good.
Besides which, he also deprived Yosef, who was also called Caiaphas, of the high priesthood, and appointed Jonathan, the son of Ananus, the former high priest, to succeed him, after which he took his journey back to Antioch.
Okay. All right, now, this, of course, very interesting. It shows how the Judahites revered these vestments of the high priest and wanted to be sure that they were kept, you know, kept safe. But the people who were wearing them since the days of Herod were not Israelites and certainly were not direct descendants of Moses or Aaron. Okay.
That's right. Those vestments included the breastplate with the Urim and the Tummim, which they used to cast lots to get word from Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
He used that.
Yeah. Yeah, so since the days of Herod, the high priests were appointed by non-Israelite leaders. Okay, that's a total violation of the law, and so Vitellius, obviously, he doesn't know what the law is. He didn't like this guy Caiaphas, you know, who was an evil character and probably an Edomite. Okay, and he replaced him with another person who was not qualified, son of Ananus, or Ananias, I think he's called, or Annas in the Bible, who was actually a priest of Babylon. All right, so you see that the religious leaders in Judea at this time were not Judahite, you know, by blood. They simply were not. So the priesthood had been totally usurped by these foreigners, primarily Edomites. Okay, section 4. And we have about 9 minutes left. Moreover, Tiberius sent a letter to Vitellius and commanded him to make a league of friendship with Artabanus, the king of Parthia. Artabanus was probably a Judahite, a descendant of Peretz, Phares Judah.
Right.
For while he was his enemy, he terrified him because he had taken Armenia away from him, lest he should proceed further, and told him he should no otherwise trust him than upon this giving him hostages, and especially his son Artabanus. Upon Tiberius's writing thus to Vitellius, by the offer of great presents of money, he persuaded both the king of Iberia and the king of Albania to make no delay but to fight against Artabanus. Okay, this is leading.
Well, Iberia is what we now call Spain.
That's correct.
And it comes from Ibri, which is Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
which means Hebrew, and right. This is the land of the Hebrews.
Amen.
Iberia.
And those are the people to whom Paul wrote his epistle.
That's correct.
Right. Okay.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Okay, so here, here we see that Rome was still fighting Parthia. And most people don't know, and the history of Parthia has been totally covered up by the Jews because they don't want us to know that many of our ancestors were Parthians of Judahite That's stock, correct. Okay, otherwise known as Germans, okay, and that Parthia was such a powerful empire that they fought Rome to a standstill. Now, how is it possible that an empire which was so powerful is never mentioned in any history books? What's up with that?
Because they were Israelites and they fought Rome to a standstill.
And nobody wants us to know about that. Okay.
I wonder why.
All right. And, of course, the so-called three wise men, which were greater in number than three, there was a whole caravan of them that came to Herod.
Right.
And Herod was afraid. Why was Herod afraid? Because this was a powerful army that he did not want to cross, okay?
They were Parthians.
Mm-hmm. They were Parthians. Amen. Okay.
And so nobody messed with the Parthians.
Yeah. And then he continues, and although they would not do it themselves, yet did they give the Scythians a passage through their country and opened the Caspian gates to them and brought them upon Artabanus. Now, the Scythians were also Israelites.
Yep.
We're going to cover the Scythians in our next YCP. So, yeah. Armenia was again taken from the Parthians, and the country of Parthia was filled with war, and the principal of their men were slain, and all things were in disorder among them. The king's son also himself fell in these wars, together with many 10,000s of his army. Vitellius had also sent such great sums of money to Artabanus' father's kinsmen and friends that he had almost procured him to be slain by the means of those bribes which they had taken. So Rome was going to great lengths to overthrow Parthia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And when Artabanus perceived that the plot laid against him was not to be avoided, because it was laid by the principal men, and those a great many in number, and that it would certainly take effect, when he had estimated the number of those that were truly faithful to him, as also of those that were already corrupted, but were deceitful in their kindness they professed to him, and were likely upon trial to go over to his enemies, he made his escape to the upper provinces, where he afterwards raised a great army out of the Dahe and Sake. All right. More terms for Israelites.
Chakra, yeah.
Yeah, Sake, you know, the Saxons.
Saxons.
Yeah, the Saxons. And fought with his enemies and retained his principalities. So why would this Parthian be allied with the Dake and the Sake? Because they were all Israelites. They were kinsmen, and they knew it. All right?
Right.
Okay.
Well, we're just about...
Yeah.
Out of time here.
Okay.
We're going to continue this next week, unless the world blows up and all kinds of new stuff happens, and
right.
Trump gets impeached and
or murdered, right?
Nancy Pelosi is declared queen, and
right.
Ocasio-Cortez.
And Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi get married and have the Antichrist.
Yeah.
Oh, I can see it.
Oh, man.
Wow. So we can see that this type of history, as recorded by Josephus, has been repeated over and over again by our enemies, always laying plots and designs against our leaders.
Well, it's the same. It's the same today. They're doing... the same thing. Plots, wars, rumors of wars, conspiring to get us to attack this country and that country that won't accept the central bank. I mean, this is just, you know,
mm-hmm.
It's an ongoing comedy, folks.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's fatal. It's very fatal. As James McManus related yesterday, the white race was the most populous race on the face of the earth before World War I. Okay.
Right.
And World Wars I and II decimated our race to the point that, only 30% of us, survived those two wars. And all we ever hear about is the fictitious 6 million, right? Well, what about the millions of white people that perished during those two world wars to keep so that the Jews could get Palestine yet again?
Right.
Yeah. That's what history is, Jewish intrigues laid bare, but nobody reports about their intrigues. All they report is the battles and the people and the leaders. They never talk about the moneylenders and how much profit they make off of these wars. I don't recall a single textbook.
Who is doing skullduggery behind the scenes, engineering these wars as to make a profit?
Right. But that would be conspiracy talk, Pastor Steve. That's not allowed in academic circles.
Especially on YouTube. YouTube is going to censor the daylights out of everybody.
No Jew speak. No Jew speak allowed on YouTube or any other platforms. The Jews will not allow us to criticize them. So it's getting worse all the time, folks. So your only alternative is alternative media, independent media, whether it's us here at Eurofolk Radio or other sources of information who are not afraid to talk about the Jews, whether they call them the deep state or, Zionists or whatever.
All these cutesy-tootsy little code words.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Essentially, they're Jews. And the Jews are trying to censor our speech to forbid us to talk about them. Yeah. All right? Because they're so afraid.
Engineered by the... Oh, we can't say that.
All right.
I love that little song. Oh, yeah, I love that. That is a great theme song.
It's so clever. It's so clever. So so this is the type of mind control, Jew speak, that we live under with the current regime. And it's been this way, since 1913, when the ADL was formed to censor Jew speak. Okay? But we're not going to succumb to this censorship, folks. We will be here for you, telling you the truth about true Israel and the fake ones who call themselves Jews. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition. We will see you next time.
See you later, everybody. Yahweh bless and keep you.
Amen.
Beep.